Okay, so Michael asked me to give this talk. I think the program has a funny title to it, which is a common mistake when people talk about charged lepton flavor violation, lepton flavor violation, and lepton number violation. And these are three different things. So I'm talking about charged lepton flavor violation and what's the scale of new physics. And again, charged lepton flavor violation, we heard about some of this from Bob yesterday. It's a key probe of physics beyond the standard model. It does lots of things for us. It's a sensitive to very heavy new physics particles. This is what I'll talk about mostly here. I want you to keep in mind, of course, it has the potential to tell us where neutrino masses are coming from. And it's a great way of testing the flavor structure of any new physics that happens to be at the weak scale. There's a lot of activity going on in this field. This is my personal, very optimistic view of what could be going on in the next decade and beyond. I think we're going to be testing a tau lepton flavor violation by at least a factor of 10 better. And I think I have about a factor of 100 here. There are several muon decay modes that we're going to be testing very, very precisely. We're going to be studying G minus 2 of the muon more precisely. And you can look at this list later. So I want to remind you that this is an incredibly clean place to look for physics beyond the standard model. It's exciting that we know that neutrino masses are not zero. That means that our lepton flavor number is not conserved. On the other hand, we have no idea what the standard model prediction for charged lepton flavor violation is because we don't know where neutrino masses come from. However, there's one calculation I can make, which is this one. So this diagram is known to be there. This would be, for example, the only contribution you would get if the neutrinos were Dirac fermions. And it turns out that the branching ratio for mu to gamma is about 10 to the minus 54. And this is because a theta 1-3 is not zero. If theta 1-3 were zero, this number would be a little bit smaller. It varies with the neutrino mass hierarchy. And things can change by, say, a factor of a couple of orders of magnitude. Nothing changes the fact that this is ridiculously small.
Yeah, forget me.
Of course, yeah. I do want to mention that if you calculate, say, the transition, you know, the mu to e gamma, the mu to e conversion in nuclei out of this diagram, it turns out you get something that's way bigger. So I think you get like 10 to minus 46 or so, which is still very small, but it's way bigger than that. So Bob showed this plot, and I don't want to explain this plot except to say that this is a way of asking what would a general model give you that mediates a charged lepton flavor violation by looking at effective operators that you could get out of the new heavy physics. There are two types of models. One are these dipole moment type operators. The other one are these four fermion operators. And what we did is we came up with this plot that kind of spans the model space as you go horizontally. And it tells you how heavy the new physics is vertically. And I think what Michael asked me to tell you about is you know, this number here is 10 to the 4 TeV, which is a pretty big number. So is it really possible to have new particles that weigh 10 to the 4 TeV and still have a large contribution for these processes here? Now, the main purpose of this plot is not just to point out this 10 to the 4, but also to show how things change as you vary the model from something that predominantly gives you a 4 fermion operator to something that predominantly gives you a magnetic dipole moment type operator. And the purpose of this is to compare the different decay models, try to convince you that to look for things like mu to e conversion is a much better bet than to look for things like mu to e gamma. And there are lots of technical reasons for looking at mu to e conversion as well, and I'm not going to be talking about that. Okay? So, this is the same thing you can do for mu to 3 electrons, and this is another type of a process where you can get a 4 fermion operator that gives you mu to 3 electrons, or you can get it via some magnetic dipole moment type operator. Again, the reach is not as good as for mu to e conversion, but it's still pretty good, you know, 2,000 TeV kind of reach, which is not bad. So what does lambda mean? So clearly, you have to have a model to translate lambda into couplings and masses. There are a couple of generic comments I want to make, and that's the main message. Since I only have 10 minutes, this is the end of my talk. Everything that comes after this is completely irrelevant. But this is the important part. If you're talking about mu to e gamma, mu to e gamma has to happen at the loop level, okay? And it has to contain an E suppression because it talks to the photon through somebody coupling to the photon. So unless you have a particle with charge 1,000, this will be a suppression factor. And the only thing that can come back is the fact that this mu to e gamma is actually a hidden dimension 5 operator where you have a chiral suppression. So you can have things like a tan beta enhancements if somehow your coupling to the muon is bigger than you would naively anticipate due to the fact that the Mu-Nicol coupling is small. So hopefully that made sense. So what we mean by 1 over lambda squared is actually something that looks like that. And you notice that there's a 16 pi squared, there's an e. And so the types of masses that you end up being sensitive to are things like a TeV, if you're talking about a lambda of about, say, 1,000 TeV or so, because all of these suppression factors come into play. On the other hand, for both of these other processes, mu to 3 electrons and mu to e conversion, you can have new physics at the 3 level that does this for you. So 1 over lambda squared really can just be a new coupling square divided by m squared. So if you have a new physics model that happens to not care about flavor at all, meaning that these y's are order 1, then what we mean by lambda can really be the mass of these new particles. Okay, so very generically, these types of processes are qualitatively different. And if you have new heavy physics, and I mean very heavy and not just 1 TeV heavy, these are probably the places you would go to try to see if there's new physics, assuming that the physics is indifferent to flavor. So let me mention some examples. The vanilla example I'll mention is a supersymmetry radar parity violation. I'm not advocating that supersymmetry is correct. I'm not advocating that our parity violation is nice. But I am advocating that this is a great proxy for lots of things, including leptoquarks and whatever you like or don't like. And I will only talk about this trilinear R parity violation. And again, this is one place where we can get some of these processes at the 3 level. And I do want to mention, incidentally, that if you do believe in SUSY, but you don't like it to be at the electroweak scale, but maybe higher, say at 10 TeV or 100 TeV or 1,000 TeV, this would be one of the very few ways of actually getting to that physics. Okay, so I will try to make that point. So here's one example. You turn on some of these couplings, and all of a sudden you notice that you get mu to 3 electrons at the 1 loop level. Mu to 3 electrons at the 3 level, mu to e gamma at the loop level, mu to e conversion at the loop level. And the ratios of branching ratios have a character that looks like that. And it's clear by staring at these numbers that the thing to look for in this model is mu to 3 electrons. Okay? I can do the same thing with mu to e conversion. I can get mu to e conversion at the 3 level like this. And notice that, so let me back up and make the point that I made before. If the SUSY particles are really heavy, these couplings can easily be of order 1. Modulo bounds from neutrino masses, which I am not including here. You have to worry about those. And if that's the case, you really are sensitive to physics at the 10,000 TeV level and only in mu to e conversion. You get absolutely nothing happening at mu to e gamma and mu to 3 electrons. You know, mu to e conversion is enhanced with respect to mu to e, with respect to mu to e gamma, this ratio is about 1, by about 5 orders of magnitude. Okay? Here's another example. There's something called the type 2 seesaw model. That's when the neutrinos get a mass due to the VeV of a triplet Higgs with hypercharge 1. That means you have a Lagrangian that looks like this. This triplet here gets a VeV. The neutrino mass looks like that. And this triplet here has friends that have, say, different charges, including a doubly charged Higgs and a singly charged Higgs. And that will also contribute to mu to e gamma and mu to e conversion at the loop level. But you actually get mu to 3 electrons at the 3 level just by exchanging one of these guys. And again, in this language, 1 over lambda squared goes like the product of the neutrino masses, which is a really small number, divided by the VeV of the triplet and the mass of the triplet there. Now, clearly, the challenge is we don't know what these couplings are, and we don't know what this triplet VeV is. But if the triplet VeV is really small, the couplings are large, which means that even for triplet masses above, say, 10 TeV or 100 TeV, as long as the VeV is very small, you really are testing new degrees of freedom that are very, very heavy. Now, clearly, we have absolutely no idea what this triplet VeV is. You can ask all kinds of naturalness questions about how can you get a triplet VeV that's 1 electron volt, and I will not answer that. This model has other issues that you actually have to break lepton number explicitly, otherwise you get a massless state and all kinds of issues, but this is just an example. So that was my purpose here. So I'm giving you the example. Let me just talk for the last 2 minutes, which I think I have, is what are these types of experiments good for, after all? Because again, I measure a lambda. I'm trying to give you new examples where lambda can actually be the mass of the new physics particles, But it could be way less than that because we don't know the couplings. And if you only measure one number, which is a combination of other numbers, what do you really learn? And the answer is the power of the learning is in combining things. So you have to look for many other types of observables in order to figure out what's the physics that's been exposed by looking for charged lepton flavor violation. There are lots of examples of that. Let me just give you one interesting example, which is something that we've already learned from Mutui gamma searches in the G-2. And this is probably the last thing I'll say. So the G-2 from new physics is also an effective operator that looks like this. The Mutui gamma from new physics is an operator that looks like that. If you stare at it long enough, you figure out that they're exactly the same operator, except for the fact that this one has two muons on it. This one has a muon and an electron. So I can add a penalty factor, which I call theta, which is the cost of changing the muon for the electron. And what's exciting is if you believe in new physics in G-2, you now know what lambda is. Lambda is about 1 TeV, by the way. So now that you know lambda, you can go in and you can plug in lambda here, and then you notice that you haven't measured Mutui gamma yet. That means that if you believe in the G-2, this theta here from this new physics has to be less than about 10⁻⁴. So we've just learned that there is new physics at the TeV scale, but for some mysterious reason, it doesn't like to violate flavor at all, I mean, by about a factor of 10⁴. So that's the sort of the way that we learn about the structure of these models. So this, I think, is the last thing that I'll just flash up here. I think it's interesting that, you know, what can you learn from charged lepton flavor violation by combining it with other things? Let me just give you an example from collider physics. So for example, observe charged lepton flavor violation, and you see new particles at the weak scale. That's the best case scenario. So this is interesting. It basically means that there's new physics at the TeV scale. That's from the colliders. And you start to probe the flavor sector of that new physics because you've seen charged lepton flavor violation. If you see something at the collider, but you still don't see Mutui gamma or anything that looks like that, then you know that there's new physics at the TeV scale, but it really doesn't like to violate flavor. And understanding why that happens is very interesting, and it's something we'll have to work on. On the flip side, you can see no new physics at the colliders, but you might see something in charged lepton flavor violation. That either means that the new physics is purely leptonic, which means it's hard to see at the LHC, or that it's above the TeV scale, and then the challenge is to figure out which option you're living with. And finally, there's a scenario that we're in right now that we haven't seen anything anywhere. And you know, we still have a lot of work to do, but it seems that there's no new physics that's colliders. And if you're trying to define your way forward, it looks like the charged lepton flavor violation has a lot of room to grow. I mean, we're talking about improving sensitivities for, say, things like Mutui conversion by about, four orders of magnitude. And there does not seem to be a showstopper. That means we can improve that by an order, say, two orders of magnitude, if we just had completely crazy facilities that gives us an infinite number of muons. And we're actually working on doing that part, but I won't talk about that. So that's it. Thank you.
I have a question, which is there one of these combinations between lepton flavor violation and neutrino oscillation? There must be one.
Mm-hmm.
If you would say a word about that, I'd appreciate it.
So the most direct connection is this triplet model that I talked about. And if you're unhappy with that, you can ask the question again. So this is a very simple model. You say that there's a Higgs triplet. It gets a VEV. That gives you directly the neutrino mass matrix. That gives you then what the neutrino masses and mixing angles are.
What's the size of MEE and MUE?
Those numbers, okay, so thank you. So these are elements of the neutrino mixing, the neutrino mass matrix and the bases where everything else is diagonal. So these are combinations of neutrino mixing angles and masses. These numbers are below an electron volt.
Ah, okay.
So let me then ask, so the exciting piece of this is that the rates for all of these are charged lepton flavor violating searches are proportional to these elements here of the mixing matrix. Mm. That means that there's a really strong, almost one-to-one correlation between ratios of branching ratios of charged lepton flavor violating processes and things that you can measure in the neutrino sector.
Oh, I see. Yeah, this I didn't understand. So
I'm sorry. This is very important.
Is
yeah.
It's you got to make VT really small.
VT has to be really small, yeah. The issue always is the couplings, right? Well, so the issue is this particular combination here can't be incredibly small.
Right.
And the way to make it be not so small is that you don't want VT to be really big, and you don't want the triplet masses to be really big. On the other hand, if you have, say, a VEV, which is a 1 MeV, which is a VEV that I can come up with, and if you have a triplet mass that's less than, 10 TeV, that's safely out of the reach of collider experiments, you still get pretty good bounds, good rates for charge lepton flavor violation. Let me say this in a different way. Some of the best constraints on this model come from neutral electrons. So what constrains the parameter space of these models are charge lepton flavor violating processes. So that's where we are. You know, it's not so this is something that's built for mu3 electrons or tau to two muons and one electron or any other combination of that you like.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Andre, can you say something about Z prime sensitivity in the measurements of mu to E gamma and mu to 3E in the context of colliders? And there's limits now on Z prime in the colliders, and there's presumed higher sensitivity
right.
for Z prime in those.
So I, not having thought about this very much, it's a relatively similar story than the one that we're telling here. So when you try to measure this at a collider, you are sensitive to a particular combinations of the coupling and the mass. Right. So you want the mass to be not very heavy, and you want the coupling not to be tiny so you can see a nice looking peak. When you talk about observables like this, what you're always constraining is the equivalent of G Fermi for the Z prime, plus some lepton flavor violating components to it. So you're kind of saying that G Fermi has to be, you know, less than something, but that can either be because G is very small or it can be because the mass is very large. So the way that these bounds come in from the colliders and from the effective operators is sort of complementary. You measure slightly different combinations of things. I suspect that, again, the other side of the story, which is very important to keep in mind, is charge lepton flavor violation is a very deep bound or deep probe of new physics as long as you can violate flavor. So you can always hide behind flavor. You can always say, oh, I don't violate flavor, hence I don't see any of this. The same happens for EDMs, of course. EDMs are even deeper probes of some of this. Joanne has had this very nice slide in her talk. But you can hide behind CP violation. You can say, look, I have new physics, which is at the TeV scale. It would really like to violate a CP, but it doesn't. So that's the end of that. So that, if you want, is the weakness of these probes is in the flavor violation, is that if you have any model where you say, oh, I have new particles at the 10 TeV level, you're allowed to say, oh, you're ruled out by mu3 gamma. Yeah. And then you have to say, however, my physics doesn't know how to violate flavor. And we've gotten very good at doing that.
Yes, so I've seen.
Thank you very much.